Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to this Hustons event. Well, we're going to be focusing on the West of England's economy, the strengths, some of the weaknesses, some of the opportunities, and some of the threats. I'd like to thank KPMG for hosting us, very kindly for doing that, and for Business West for partnering with us to put on this fantastic event. We have in front of us our five candidates, and they're ready to answer your questions. And the candidates are Tim Bowles from the Conservatives, Darren Hall from the Green Party, Leslie Mansell from Labour, John Savage, Independent, Stephen Williams, Liberal Democrats. And just let me be clear for those that are in the room, we also asked the UKIP candidate Aaron Foote to join us, but unfortunately he was unable to, or he's not available for this evening, but he was invited, but he couldn't attend. So before we get to hear from our candidates, just give me a sense as to how we're going to run this event. In a minute, I'm going to ask each of our candidates to come to the lectern and give their opening statements. 2 minutes, no more. They have promised that they will not go over their 2 minutes on their vision, on their perspectives about the West of England's economy. Once we've heard from all five, then we'll get into questions from you. And I know quite a few of you have submitted questions already, which thank you very much for that. We will come to some of those that have already been pause and get those people to ask those questions, or if you can't remember what you've asked, I will read that out on your behalf. And we're going to try and organise this, so I'm asking for a bit of discipline from you in the audience as well as a discipline from my candidates around three themes. So the first theme is jobs and skills, the second theme is housing and transport, and the third theme is business and enterprise. Obviously a lot of that interrelates, that's the way the economy works, but nevertheless, to try and make sure we get through some different questions, some different issues, we're going to try and organise ourselves in those three themes. And we'll run for 10 to 15 minutes on each theme, so make sure that we get some questions and some good answers from that. Towards the end of the event, I'll give our candidates another chance to leave you with their final thoughts on the economy and the things they'd like you to take away. We will finish no later than 7 o'clock. But if you wish to stay after 7 o'clock, there are some drinks, soft or otherwise, outside, and you can carry on the discussion, take advantage of the kind hospitality that KPMG are offering us. So that's how we're going to do it. So discipline on both sides means we get more questions, which will be good for you, but we also get our candidates answering more questions and giving their fuller answers as well. So discipline on both fronts, I think, is a good way for us to go. So without further ado, Tim, you drew the lot, so you're up first. You get your 2 minutes, and then we'll be followed by Darren. So, without further ado, Tim, the floor is yours.
Thank you very much indeed. We've all just had a discussion beforehand together, and each one of us has agreed that we'll all speak from here for the purposes of this exercise. So, just really to give a bit of context and background to things. Firstly, thank you all very much indeed for coming this evening. I think I'll just say this on behalf of all of us. This is our first Hustings, so it's great to be here, and it's great to see so many people along. I'm really pleased that this evening's debate is going to be about the economy, because my personal vision about making the West of England Regional Mayor a real success is about driving our economy. It has been all the way through my campaign, and everybody who knows me in all the work I've done previously will vouch for the fact that I see this as critical to make this role a success. To make the economy successful, we do have to look at it very much in the round. And again, my campaign is very much about having the economy at the hub of everything that we do. This is a huge region. We have a great success story already in terms of us being the second most successful region in the country. We drive really good world-class businesses. We have great creative, digital, tourism, and so many other things happening in our economy. But we must do better. The economy does need improved infrastructure. It needs improved transport. We do have to provide skilled employees to meet the needs of every single sector that we have in the region. In doing that, we must make sure that we start closing the gaps in the housing needs for everybody. This has to work across the entire region, and that is going to be my focus, to make sure everything I do is about working to benefit everybody. My skill set is very much a case of a mix of business background, business expertise, but a long and successful career also in public service. I've got skills, as I say, from the business side to work on that side and drive the economy in terms of business promotion and putting the right projects in place to help every type of business we have. I've got the skills from working with government today and as a local councillor in terms of driving those things forward. 30 seconds. Thank you. I wasn't quite sure whether that was So really what I want to do is bring all of that experience, expertise and skills together to work on behalf of everybody. It is critical that we have somebody in this role who is going to be able to unite, be chair of the West of England Combined Authority, and somebody who can work with all our partner groups as well. So it has to be somebody who understands working with councils, working with government, today's ministers, and who can work with all our partners and really promote the business side, drive the economy forward, and then meet the needs we have in the infrastructure, transport and housing.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Let's move quickly on to Darren Hall, Green Party.
Thank you. Good evening, everyone. We're lucky enough to live and work in one of the most amazing places in Europe. Indeed, business leaders often say that they can hire and retain the best staff outside of London. But the reason? Well, they say quality of life. This quality of life is not defined purely by GDP, but by a really great work-life balance. Now, despite what many of you might think, the Green Party isn't anti-business. We know that the best way to help people, to help themselves, is through meaningful work that pays a living wage. And tax paid by employees and businesses helps pay for civil society to function. So it's the long-term viability of our region's economy in which I am most interested. I'm fairly sure most of you would agree that if we fail to properly balance profit with people and planet, then we are setting ourselves up to fail. We have the opportunity here to lead the world in the next generation of smart urban living. But this is a much broader concept than just the Internet of Things or driverless cars. It's about the systems thinking that enables a city and its surrounding areas to function properly. This means taking a place-based approach, rather than perhaps that short-term silo thinking that's seen local politicians fighting over boundaries that are meaningless to anyone outside of the political bubble. It means addressing the housing crisis within a generation, not by building des-res on the greenbelt. It means confronting congestion and air quality, not by building more roads, but by having an integrated transport system. It means accepting that we cannot isolate ourselves from global issues such as climate change, political destabilisation, biodiversity loss and soil degradation. I believe that as Mayor of the West of England Combined Authority, I can lead that place-based systems thinking.
Very good. Thank you very much indeed. Darren. Third candidate, Leslie Mansell from Labour. Leslie, you have 2 minutes when you get to the...
Thank you. My name's Leslie Mansell and I'm very proud to be the Labour Party candidate for Metro Mayor for the West of England. This is a huge opportunity, not just for me, but for all of us, because we do have a region that contributes more to the economy than any other region in the country. And what we need to do is make sure that that is shared out more equally with everyone that lives across the West of England. The issues I see coming through from people, the concerns they largely have is around social care, which is not part of the Metro Mayor's remit. However, the next biggest one is housing, and we've got to get to grips with that. As Metro Mayor, I would bring together the three authorities, look at the joint spatial plan, and look at what we can do to improve not just the number of housing, but the quality of housing, making sure they're green, efficient, and that people can afford them. At the moment, we have a real problem with people not being able to afford to either buy a house or to rent a house. Transport is another big issue. I live in Radstock. I work in the NHS, one of the biggest organisations employers in the country. And it can take me 2 hours to travel 22 miles across the city. And I know a lot of other people are having to do that journey as well. So we need to be looking at how we manage the economy so people can work closer to home, or where they can flexibly work, so that it's not about coming into to cities every day, to Bristol or to Bath. And also we need to look at the skills that people have, that they match the jobs that are there. At the moment we have lots of apprenticeships in North East Somerset, not people necessarily wanting to take them up. So what I want to see is a joined up approach. I want to see positive outcomes, and I want to see more transparent working. Thank you.
Our fourth candidate is John Savage, Independent. John, 2 minutes.
Good evening, everybody. Thank you. Get to the point where you say I agree. Of course, these are really key issues. And so I just say that my interest in this, John, really follows on from the 30 years that I spent leading the Bristol Initiative, which brought together not just businesses but other people to try to bring other resources onto what particularly the City Council and then even County Council were doing. We need to create change at a faster rate. It is the most successful place in the UK outside of London, but we just never perform as well as we could. About 50% of the performance of somewhere like Frankfurt. It is about strategy. I don't believe that conventional political thinking looks far enough ahead, so I wrote the book 2050, A Vision for the Future for Greater Bristol. It is about strategy, it's about being persistent, it's about being ambitious. All those things that my colleagues have mentioned are absolutely vital. And I just believe that my wider experience, not just with business, but leading the Learning and Skills Council, in the work I've done for 14 years with the hospital, will contribute to our ability to do this and to bring other resource to bear on the problems that we experience here and the opportunities. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And Stephen Williams from the Liberal Democrats. Stephen?
Well, first of all, it's quite weird for me to be in this building. More years ago than I care to remember, it was 1988 to be honest. I started work in this building when I graduated in the predecessor building to this 66 Queen Square, and I'm sorry to say to our hosts, that was PwC in those days. That was the firm I qualified with as a chartered tax advisor. And I then spent 17 years working in the private sector, both PwC, Grant Thornton, just the other side of Queen Square in those days, and then the tax manager in some of the largest companies in this region as well, Orange, EE, and the last proper job, if you like, before I became an MP was the RAC, headquartered, of course, out in Bradley Stoke. And the reason I say that is that primarily, while this is a political job, this job is primarily about political relationships, bringing together local government, going to speak to Westminster, to ministers, and to our 9 members of parliament in this region, it also needs somebody who understands the workings of the local economy. And I believe I can do that from the time that I spent working in the local economy, advising businesses and working in large businesses, but also in the time that I spent as one of the city's MPs as well, and also serving in the coalition government, ironically looking at what we needed to do to rebalance the economy, rebalance England away from our over-centralised Westminster system of government. So the origins of what we're doing now come from the Cabinet Committee on Devolution, of which I was a member, when we were responding to the Scottish referendum, saying we must solve the English question. Now, to a Liberal Democrat, solving the English question meant taking power away from London and putting it into the great city regions of the country, into Manchester, into Birmingham, and of course into Bristol and Bath as well. This is an amazing opportunity for us, but it's just the start of a journey. The devolution settlement we've got is just a start. I am ambitious for much more. Thank you.
Thank you very much indeed. We've heard from our 5 candidates their opening thoughts and some of their priorities beginning to emerge already. So we're going to move into the question session now. And my first question is from James Dury from Business West. James,
we have
candidates hold that. Pass that microphone across. When it turns green, you can speak into it.
Okay. Thanks, Andrew. Good afternoon. Yeah, James Dury from Business West. Delighted to be hosting this first hustings. My question to all the candidates is. and it comes out of the thing that people on people's seats today, a 10-point manifesto we produced to put all the candidates to challenge 10 points. It relates to one about how, certainly for the business community, we feel that this area is, despite all the efforts of lots and lots of people, we are largely invisible on a national stage. How would the candidates go about, I think, getting the kind of attention, attraction, and relationship with government and also with others, but particularly with government, and to use their experience to hear something from the candidates about that, but also about how they would seek, if they come in to get elected, to work with business in a formal way as a West of England mayor.
Great, thank you very much. Leslie, raising profile with government and working formally with the business community. Why don't we hear from you first?
Thank you. It's a huge issue, isn't it? I do feel that the West of England is abandoned quite often by government. We're invisible. And one of my roles will be to profile that, make it much bigger. Working with the partnerships we already have, so there's the Local Economic Partnership, there's organisations like your own, the Centre for Cities are hosting this tonight, there is the joint spatial plan, the joint transport plan that are already being worked on across the areas. And I think there is going to be a real issue about getting up to Whitehall and saying, look, we're here, and not just that we're here, but we're delivering. And I think the important thing for me is showing how we're delivering. It's not enough to say, well, you know, we've done this, we've done that. We've got to show what the impact is and make sure that what we're doing is transparent and that people link in with it. I think there's a bigger issue about how we get more people involved so they understand what's happening as well and they can see what the benefits are.
Great, thank you very much. Darren, let's hear from you. Working with government and formally working with the business community.
Sure, so I spent some years working in national government based in Bristol as part of Government Office South West. My last job before I left that post was to read all 43 of the local enterprise partnership's first strategies. Now, without being too rude about it, actually I only needed to read three. One was Cornwall's, one was Liverpool's, and you just read any one of the other 41. And I think the massive challenge is for Bristol and Bath, the West England region, to be much more bold about its unique selling point, because we do have a unique selling point, and that's our ability to leapfrog the current sort of economic thinking for the next generation of smart urban living. We've got tech and creative, we've got finance, we've got legal. And I think I'm an engineer by background, and if it doesn't, you know, that's a creative process that has to result in stuff actually happening and working. And for me, that's about then showing government that if they give us the freedom to operate, we can really leapfrog onto a world stage. So the opportunity's there. I just think we need to absolutely grab hold of it and be bold about where we want to be in 50 years' time.
Great. Thank you very much. Let's go to Tim.
Thank you. James, I think you make an interesting point. I think we've got to bear in mind that I think the government do recognise the West of England. They recognise it now. That's why they're going ahead with this devolution plan. I think they recognise just how strong we are. They're giving us one of the best deals in this instance in the whole of the country. But is that enough? No, it's not by any means. I recognise the work that LEP do and other councils work with government at the moment. But you're right, we have to have somebody who's prepared to do two things. One is go and make the case for the West of England with government today, and somebody, to take your point, who will go and raise the profile of the region, not just nationally, as you suggested, but internationally. Because we have some great world-class companies here who are exporting, but we also have a really, really wide economy as well. We're not just based around the large hubs we've got in Bristol. We've got a much bigger profile in terms of our business. So we've got to have that mix of somebody who can go and champion both the region in Westminster to drive forward the additional investment that I know will follow if we get this right, and somebody who can go away both nationally and globally and promote, champion us as a business hub of real world-class centres for so many things, whether it's manufacturing, finance, digital, creative, tourism. We've got so much to offer, we've really got to start shouting about it. We've got a track record in that, and I know I can deliver.
Great, thank you very much indeed. Tim, Stephen.
The two elements of James's question. First of all, how would you get the most out of the political side of the job, I guess. First of all, there's an internal diplomacy element to it, to bring together the three local authorities to speak with one voice in terms of what we actually want for this area and how we can achieve more by collaborating together. So Marvin, Matthew and Tim will be my three new best friends from day one if I am elected to this position. But there's an external diplomatic side to it as well, and that is speaking at the other end of the railway line in Westminster to all the key decision makers, from the Prime Minister down to the Secretary of State for DCLG, and business will be the key ones. And I served in government in coalition, which actually is good preparation for this sort of job. You know, there couldn't have been a more difficult relationship building exercise than working in coalition government with another party, and this essentially is going to end up being the similar arrangement. But it does mean I know Theresa May, I know Sajid Javid, I know Greg Clark as well. So I will instantly be able to have meetings with them, speak on the phone to say, what we've got now, yeah, it's okay, but we need so much more. Just give you one example, electrification of the railway line being stopped at Chippenham. Why is it going on to Cardiff, or is not coming here into the centre of Bristol? That's because there was no one speaking with authority for us in Westminster. So Chris Grayling knew the Welsh Government would never let him get away with stopping electrification going all the way through to Cardiff, but he knew he could get away with not doing it to Bristol. And that's one very good example of how the West of England does get left behind. And the business community, in all the time that I was a Member of Parliament, I not only met formally with Business West, with the LEP, when it was set up as well, but made it my business every single week while I was in the constituency, not just to visit the schools and hospitals and other key parts of the public sector, but also go into businesses, large and small, so I kept in touch with what the business community wanted from their elected politicians, and I would do exactly the same if I was your Metro Mayor.
Thank you very much, Stephen. John.
Thank you. So, yes, dealing with government, for 10 years I was on the board of the Regional Development Agency, and during that same time I was the chairman of the Learning and Skills Council of the South West, being the budget for education. What I discovered there was, well, for the Learning and Skills Council in 10 years, I think I had 9 different ministers. So you just get to know one and they form. What I discovered, and what I know for sure, if you want to deal with government, you've got to have oven-ready projects that you can convince and have a deal that is worth something to them as well as us, and that is key. We so often in this area do not have our projects and our desires worked out, and that plays into the problem of, first of all, trying to get 7 local authorities to work together before 96 and then 4. Finding common purpose is a challenge, and that requires sort of intermediary position that this new job really offers. As for business, well, I'm a businessman amongst other things. I don't believe profit is everything. My hospital is one of only 3 in the whole country that is solvent and has been solvent for 14 years. But I tell my board, the people that we're looking after are not our customers and we are not a business. But we have to behave in a business-like way. And I'm absolutely certain, without business, there is nothing. And the support of business in answer to this question is vital.
Great, thank you very much. Right, let's get some questions from the audience. We have one submitted from Becky Farmer from Airbus. Is Becky here? Becky, have you got it in front of you? You do, great. Wait for the microphone, which has just come in there. If you can ask your question, and just to let you, Stephen, you will go in first.
Hi, so I'm Becky Farmer from Airbus. Airbus is proud of its provision of apprenticeships and engineering jobs for the region. But many engineering firms still really struggle finding the right talent locally. So how will you tackle this skills shortage and encourage more young people to get the STEM skills that our industries need for the future?
Great question. So, Stephen.
Thanks for the question. I visited Airbus, I think we met many times when I was doing it, and one of the last pleasures I had when I was in office was to present the Apprentice Awards for Airbus, a great event in the city centre. I think there are 2 challenges in apprenticeships, particularly in engineering. One is a gender imbalance. It struck me when I was a Lib Dem spokesman on skills for a few years in Parliament. At one end of the spectrum, you have 95% of the people who are training to go into social care and nursery care are women. And at the other end, in high-end engineering, you have 95% of the people going in tend to be male. There's a similar problem in construction as well. So we're not tapping the talent pools right across the population. That's something we have to get right from an early age in schools, motivating young people to think that this is going to be a rewarding and enjoyable and lucrative career for them. The second challenge, and it's a very topical one at the moment, is Brexit. I'm sorry to inject politics into this. One of us, certainly on this panel, and me, is implacably opposed to Brexit. I think it's a disaster for us to be catapulted out of the European Union. And many of our international businesses in Bristol, whether they're Airbus or Rolls-Royce, or our universities who provide the sort of intellectual background for the engineering research of the future, are heavily dependent on our fellow Europeans coming to live, work, and study here. So making that clear to central government that we need to stay in the single market, preferably, but we definitely need to have some freedom of movement continued into the future so that we get the highly skilled staff to drive our local economy.
Okay, great. Leslie, what would you do to address the STEM skills shortage in our industries?
Thank you. And for a long time this has been an issue, trying to attract young people into science and technical engineering areas, and especially women. I worked in engineering for 11 years, and in those days it was quite a standard process to encourage young people from local schools to get involved, take up the apprenticeships and work through. And in fact our managing director actually worked up from the shop floor, and I don't think we see so much of that going on nowadays. I know Airbus in particular, Becky, you've got a fantastic programme there of what we call widening participation. I work in the NHS and we are at the moment organising a massive piece of work around apprenticeships, because you may be aware that we are struggling to find people to work in the NHS. We've got at the moment 200 nurses from Spain who are very worried because of Brexit about whether they're going to be sent home or not. And we can't attract enough young people because the government have cut the bursaries to nurses, £4,000, and they're really struggling to make ends meet to actually carry on with the training. However, we're trying to encourage more people to come through those processes. And I think there's another issue about how we put in the support for people who really struggle to get into the job market in the first place. And part of the Metro Mayor remit will be to do that, so that 19-plus education. I was out on one of the council estates a few weeks ago where the advice centre had 2 months' money left, and they were worried about what they were going to do to support people that at the moment they're trying to support them into the job market, and I was told that the majority of them can't read. So it's not even apprenticeships we need to start with, we've got to go a bit further back than that. And we need to look at how business can work together with different communities to support them. And again, I know Airbus, Becky, you were telling me the other day that you've got a project where members of staff go out and give their time to support people to help them read, and that's just fantastic.
Great, thank you very much, Leslie. John, STEM skills shortage and apprenticeships.
Yeah, well, so this is going to become frustrating because the strategic issue really comes up in all of these things, and does it not in education? 10 years with the Learning and Skills Council, the number of times I've had this question aimed at me, and the number of times I've come to the conclusion that we just fail as a nation to understand the long-term investment in our young. And so this job is going to be frustrating. It's about laying the ground for change. We've got to find a way of encouraging young people who are marginalised, not just the ones that are clever, who are marginalised, to see that it's worth working. And by God, it's interesting if you do it. That takes a lot of change. There is a curriculum deficit in this country about the way we encourage our young people. We are too stuck with conventional qualifications as measures. So this job can contribute towards that, but there won't be a great and sudden change. We have to point to people. One of my current responsibilities includes a school for young people who are completely marginalised, they're excluded. They're amazing youngsters. They're being written off. And yet, with a little bit of time, you see that underneath their sort of dull exterior, they all have great talent. It needs teasing out, and we've got to try to bring our influence to bear to make those changes. You can't change people at 16 if you haven't thought about them at 4.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Very,
John.
Very good.
Darren.
Thanks. Yeah, I'll build on that, actually, because two quick stories. One was speaking to a head teacher who had been in London and on a daily basis was being asked by parents to say, is my five-year-old, six-year-old going to go to university? And she moved to Cornwall and she said she'd been there a year and almost the entire year had gone by without a parent saying, is my child going to go to university? Now, that difference in aspiration is very real. And thinking back to, I'm an engineer, I did 5 years of British Aerospace, but my interest was sparked when my dad helped me make model airplanes when I was 5, 6, and that led me through that path. So there's something is about inspiring that generation, next generation of people to get involved in practical vocational stuff that then leads them into being interested in maths and science and those other skills that you need to then get into apprenticeships. But there is a next generation of young people coming through now who are really interested in the future economy. And I think that's a huge opportunity to be talking to those people about the low carbon sector and setting up in the west of England apprenticeships which is specifically around the opportunities of the next 50 years, that smart urban living. I think it will inspire them. Finally, just to say that I think it's inevitable, given what the government is doing to funding, that we're going to have to set up business partnerships between education and business to help fund those innovative processes that are going to help young people access apprenticeships and jobs. Just complaining about it isn't going to get us very far, and I think we're going to need, as a LEP and a West of England Combined Authority, to look at those business investment partnerships which will directly address places for people into vocational training.
Great, thank you very much. Tim.
Apprenticeships, STEM, skill shortages.
Thank you, and I was just going to say, Spanky, your question, as I understood it, was what will the Mayor do vis-à-vis STEM skill shortages, and
yep.
So I'd like to address that question. I think there's two things that the Mayor has to do, and I think it's two things, therefore, that the Mayor can do. One is take that conversation back to government, because it is vital as a nation we recognise the importance of apprenticeships. That is something I think that is happening. There are more apprenticeships now than there have been for many years. But the other question, therefore, is what can we do as a regional mayor about it? I think we all recognise in the room the importance of apprenticeships. We recognise how important STEM as a sector is. One of the things I find when I talk to people is people say, what do you mean by STEM? So I think what the Mayor can do is actually go out and start promoting, marketing, talking to both people who are currently at that stage, but also people who are in schools and are coming through into the job market about how vital STEM is, but also what brilliant opportunities we as a region offer people as long-term careers by coming into apprenticeships, working with world-class organisations like Airbus, and putting it together like that. So I see it very much as a marketing role, a promotion role regionally, starting with schools, driving it all the way through, taking it on to part of the adult education remit as well, and also driving that message at national level. That way, I think the Mayor can make a difference to the challenges that you've put in front of us.
Great. Thank you very much, Tim. Right. Hands up if you've got a question in relation to jobs and skills, either continuation of some of what you've heard or a different issue that you want to raise. I'm going to take two, and then we're going to move on to transport and houses. And the gentleman halfway up, you can stand up there.
Sorry, Tim.
Wait for the microphone, please, sir.
I don't need a microphone.
Yes, you do, please. For everybody else. If you could just wait for the microphone, that would be great. And then the lady right at the back. If you could be nice and sharp, short and sharp, and our candidates will be
yes,
as well.
Yes, we'll be very short and sharp.
Thank you,
Chairman. Yes, what is STEM? I'm sorry, I'm at a loss. I'm from the sticks.
Science, technology, engineering and maths.
Thank you.
Okay, that was a nice short. Sorry, candidates. And this do we all agree on that, candidates, or do we have a different area? Very good. Yes. At the back.
Hello, hi. I'm Nikki Williams. I'm Head of Skills at Business West. I just had a question around, which is more of sort of going back to talking about young people and going right back to the beginning, we have a real issue in the whole region around fair and equitable access to education across the board. So I'd like to know what the Mayor proposes to do to ensure that there's fair access and equitable access to education from primary school up.
Great, thank you very much indeed. Let's go to John first then. Fair access, young people across the board. John?
Yeah, so the Mayor doesn't have a magic wand, and at below 19, the skills job is not a direct thing. It is about telling the story coherently to those people who can influence it and finding those partnerships against a coherent story. That's all that can be done. We do need to engineer change in the approach to how we educate young people.
Okay, Stephen. Fair access, young people.
That's one of the reasons I'm still in politics. It's one of the passions that drives me, that Britain is an unfair country. We need to do more about it. And one of the reasons it's unfair is your life opportunities are still, in this country, fixed pretty much at birth. While education can get you onto a better track, and it worked certainly for me, there are still far too many young people who are left behind in the system. Not because they're not up to it, but because nobody encourages them and spots the potential and says you are up to it and gives them the emotional as well as the educational support to do it. The thing I'm most proud that the coalition government did, there were many good things the coalition government did, but the thing I'm most proud of, because I helped write the policy, was the pupil premium, which badges extra money for every child who's on free school meals to make sure they get the support through primary school, through secondary school, so they are then ready to go for that world-class apprenticeship or for that university place if that's what is best for them. And there is still a lot of work that could be done with our schools in parts of the city to make sure they're using that money well, not just to keep children on track with their literacy and numeracy, but to keep them on track with the aspirations that people in BS9, BS8 will take for granted, but in other parts of this city and some parts of Bath and the Summer Valley as well, they might not be getting that exhortation that you can do it. And I think having a Metro Mayor who's done that journey from being on free school meals to going to university to being a minister and doing this post, hopefully will encourage people as well.
Great. Tim.
Thank you. If I may, I could just refer back to my earlier answer. I think it shows from one of the first questions that yes, we do need to actually go out and explain a lot more about what STEM means, what apprenticeship means. So I think that actually probably brought my point home. In terms of how we go and take the message out again, I think I've touched on it already in part of the things I was talking about. The Mayor, whilst they won't have direct responsibility for that, will have the ability, as that figurehead, the champion for the region, to be able to go out and take those messages out across the board throughout the region. And yes, there are areas where that message needs to be reinforced. We do need to bring home the story about the opportunities that there are for everybody in this region, and really, really good opportunities. So it doesn't matter whether people are living in the middle of the cities, whether they're out in the countryside, or for whatever other aspects we refer it to, the Mayor can go out and promote the long-term success and viability of this region, and that's something I think they can bring to the challenge you've brought.
Great, thank you very much. Darren?
I think we need to get real about this, because the issues, the real issues start way before, I think, that what people are talking about. For example, getting rid of Sure Start was one of the worst things that this government has done in taking away the foundations for people who were struggling. So there's some really simple stuff. If you rip apart some of those really supportive things for very early life and the families, of course they're going to then struggle all the way through. So we have to balance our effort and put more concentrated resources into areas that need it the most. But one of the most depressing pieces of work I did in government was negotiating the target for 5 GCSEs with English and Maths for looked after children for Bristol. And we were sat in a room talking about the target. It was a local area agreements target set by government and agreed by Bristol City Council. And they said, could we agree 6%? I'm sorry, what? You want to aspire for 6% of looked after children to get 5 GCSEs with English and Maths? That's your target, not 90% or 95%, 5%. So our collective aspiration for those kids
looked after children was 5%. Actually, over the next 3 years, they, and that's about 50 kids per year, they achieved 0, 2, and 0. Now that's where this starts to go wrong, and that's where we've got to go back to the beginning and look at how we help people from the very start of their lives.
Great, thank you very much indeed. Leslie.
Thank you. I'm absolutely amazed that in 2017, here we are with an education system that excludes people rather than includes people. It's absolutely crucial that we start looking at how we change that and we involve people. What we have now in Bristol, in the west of England, this is the Local Economic Partnership figures, is black and minority ethnic people earn 10% less than white. So what is going on there? And I look around this room and apologise to anybody minority ethnic, but I don't see many people from the black community. And I think somehow we are letting those people down. Where I work in the NHS, I've been working on a project to encourage both black and minority ethnic people and disabled people to give them support, getting the sorts of skills so they can travel up through the grades within the health service. And that support is something that can be done by the Metro Mayor. What we've got is also a higher proportion of BME pupils being excluded from schools, and we see a higher proportion of BME people in prisons. Now, it is not rocket science to join that up. We don't need to do a lot of research to look at what's going on and find out what we're not doing right. Training was actually cut by Norman Tebbit many years ago, which has not helped us. We don't have people doing the jobs that we need to do. We need to work with business to find out where the skill shortages are and support the people to get those skills so they can get into work, so they're not all ending up on the gig economy where they can hardly survive.
Great, thank you very much. Okay, let's move on to the second stream, which is housing and transport. Let me say that overwhelmingly, in terms of questions submitted both before the event and when people were downstairs, housing and transport by far has solicited the most responses. And for the sake of brevity in terms of response, there's a universal agreement that you have some problems around congestion and you have some problems around coverage. So you don't need to describe the transport problem, that's universal. If you disagree with that, then you should say that. If you don't disagree with that, it's congestion and coverage, then we take that as read. When we get to housing, there's a universal agreement that A, you need more housing, and that house prices are very high, so you don't need to describe that as the problem in the housing market, unless you fundamentally disagree with those observations, and then we'd be delighted to hear your perspective. So in terms of brevity when you come to your responses, candidates, I would encourage you to get to what the Mayor will do about transport, congestion, coverage, and what the Mayor will do about housing supply and issues maybe in relation to tenure or anything else. So that's a kind of word around that. Is Ian Campion Smith in the room? Can you give the mic to him? Do you remember what your question is, Ian?
I may not be word perfect, sir, but I'll do my best.
It was nice and short, and it was to the point, so I'm relying on you.
It's about housing. How much of our green belt will you need to turn into housing to meet the need for both housing and infrastructure?
Lovely, nice and contentious issue to kick us off in this area. Darren, give it your best.
As little as possible. It's a last resort issue, but I do say that from a kind of bit of experience. To my knowledge, I think I'm the only person here who's actually in the business of building houses. I'm on the board of the Bristol Community Land Trust, and it's been an interesting experience over the last 4 years to get our first set of 16 on the ground and built, and residents are in there. We're just about to embark on our second lot of 50. And what we found is that there are actually loads of places where you could build housing, but actually the system is making it very difficult to do so. Lots of pockets that if they were grouped together and commissioned out as a collective opportunity, we could get on with building tomorrow at their brownfield sites. But the building of the houses isn't the issue, it's the ownership of the land. And if we try to fix the housing crisis by competing at market levels, we're inevitably just going to be doing what we've been doing before, and you're never going to be able to bring down house prices by oversupplying the market. Now, the reason why the market tries to build on the green belt is because it's actually easier to make profit. The big companies love to build masses of 3 and 4 bed on the green belt. So if, as Metro Mayor, I would absolutely emphasise that this is about solving the social housing crisis first as part of the bigger picture on housing. And if you do that, what you do is you look for sites that are well connected, that have the ability to be more dense, and that we allow things like self-build, self-finish and shared ownership as part of that process. So absolutely last resort for the Green Belt.
Great. Tim, how much of the Green Belt would you be building on?
Sorry, this isn't meant to sound flippant as much as Darren. What I'm committed to is trying to see us develop the homes we need. Everybody recognises this. But we need to start developing those homes close to where the infrastructure is, close to where communities are, and close to where jobs are. And that's how I want to see us trying to start solving these problems. There are a huge number of brownfield sites already. The government is investing, and the local authorities are investing in identifying those and bringing those up and opening them up to market. The Metro Mayor, I do try and always refer to it as the West of England Regional Mayor. Metro Mayor does cause some funny looks from some people. But as the Mayor, I will have the ability to start helping open up some of those brownfield sites, start bringing some of the land that's currently in public ownership to the market, and I really try and drive things through those regions. And that's how I think this can be addressed. We need to have a much longer term strategy and plan as well. The JSP looks at a 20-year programme. I think we need to review that and also have achievable and deliverable targets by reviewing not just how the JSP looks, but how that delivery programme works, so that both us as Mayor, the local authorities and the industry, we can start driving realistic delivery, because at the moment we're not delivering enough. We've got a lot of permissions, but we need to start driving delivery.
Great, thank you very much. Leslie, how much of the Green Belt would you be building on?
Well, at the moment, there's plans in place to build, and not on the Green Belt. What we need to do, and what the Metro Mayor will need to do, is make sure that we build and we sort out planning applications so we can build far quicker than we are now. There are thousands of outstanding planning applications that have gone through, been agreed, and nothing is happening. Yet Marvin Rees, who was elected as Labour Mayor in Bristol not a year ago, has already got underway plans for 150 houses, of which 60 will be affordable, subject to planning, but that's the figures they're looking at. So already there's great moves forward to try and do something a bit different. In Bath and North East Somerset, the MOD site was closed down, and what we now have, 31 houses built on there that cost nearly £1 million each. And I don't know how many of you can afford one of them, but I couldn't afford to rent one there. So there's not enough being done to build the sort of houses that people can afford.
Okay. Stephen, how much of the Green Belt would you be building on?
Well, the short answer to Ian's question is not very much, if any, at all. I wouldn't defend every single sort of green blade of grass right across the whole of the west of England. And at the moment, about 48% of the land area is designated as green belt, which might surprise some people. But clearly some areas must be robustly defended. For instance, to the north of Bristol, I wouldn't want the city to merge seamlessly into Frampton, Cottrell and Iron Acton, so you've got a finger going out towards Yates and Chipping Sodbury. That would be bad. I also wouldn't want to the southeast of the city for Bristol to merge seamlessly into Keynsham, into Salford and into Bath, so we have one great sort of megalopolis of Bristol. I think that would be disastrous for both the cities of Bristol and Bath. They both have their own characteristics that need to be protected, and it would be bad for the towns and villages in between as well. And this shouldn't be a city and county issue. When you look at why people like living in Bristol or like living in Bath, It is, one of the reasons is that they like the fact that there is countryside not that far away, and they can get into Somerset, they can get into the Mendips, they can get into the Cotswolds, or they can get into the Wye Valley as well to the west. And that's what makes our area so attractive to people, to come and invest here and to live here and bring their families here. And we risk that at our peril, really. So the answer is not very much. I think you can do a lot more in the urban areas itself, but I hope we get another question on that so I can expand on what I would do in the urban areas.
Good. Okay, so we're going to come to transport in a second. Have we got another question on... I crossed you off before you said anything, John. I apologise for that.
You always get the same answer from politicians. Time doesn't stop at the end of the next planning phase for housing. When we started the initiative, Bristol had the highest homelessness problem outside of London. It would be madness to build on very precious land. But if you look at the map boundaries of 1800, 1900 and 2000, you will see the result of a relentless drive for people to want to come to live here. And people deserve houses to live before they get anything else. So it needs more imagination. And the mistake is to just think about building houses. You have to think about the whole community, the connectivity, the facilities, the doctor's surgeries. I'm the chairman of the hospital. Can I get into my GP for an appointment? I bloody well can't.
Very good.
And the point is that the conversations through all the parts of it want to get the equation that enables housing and everything else to be put in place. That is a strategic policy issue. Somebody's got to start thinking about it.
Thank you very much, John. Apologies for crossing you off before your time, as it were. Right, have we got another question on housing? And then I'm going to come to transport in a second. Have we got another question on housing? So you've all... I'll ask you a question then. You're going to have to ramp up the supply of housing quite significantly to get anywhere near the numbers that have been suggested in plans of different persuasions. Starting with you, Leslie, give me a sense as to how that supply side is going to see a fundamental shift in the pace compared to what we've currently had over the last 5-10 years. Leslie.
Thank you. I've already outlined that the Metro Mayor will be in a position to speed up planning, and there will be an opportunity to bring together more strategically the building that goes on. I think the really important thing is to work together with the other authorities on the work that's already being done. We shouldn't throw out the good work that's already taking place. And we also need to look at the infrastructure, because there's no point, as we've seen on the ring road around Bristol, where we put a new ring road in, built around houses around it, and then you can't move up and down it. So if we're not going to put that infrastructure in to match it, that's going to be absolutely crucial, because we're going to carry on doing the same old, same old.
Okay, very good. Let's go to Stephen. You need to increase the supply of housing quite rapidly. How would you go about that, Stephen?
Well, the generally accepted figure that the number of houses we need to build across the country is in between 250,000 and 300,000 units a year for the next decade, simply to get us where we ought to be right now. We haven't built at that rate for a very long time, in fact, not since before I was born. And the reason we don't build at that rate is the state has largely retreated from being an active player in the housing market. The housing market itself, for as long as it's dominated, and since the crash of 2008-2009, is even more dominated by the large volume private sector builders, will not, and it does not really want to, build to the scale that society needs. So the state is going to have to make an intervention to get it going. And at a local level, what I'm proposing is that the three local authorities, what I would like to do is to bring them together to set up a house building company that operates like a social enterprise. So it builds both for sale, for private rental, because that's valuable in a flexible economy, and reinvest that surplus in building homes for social rent. And that's what a good social enterprise should do. And I would like to have a very large housing social enterprise in the west of England, which I will set up. The second thing is more technical. We can build at a faster rate if we stop doing it solely by building in the traditional way from foundations with bricks, scaffolding up to the rafters and so on. We have more off-site construction of modular building panels and assemble them much quicker on the ground. We could speed up the current planning permissions, to come back to what Leslie was saying, if we actually built faster. We can do to that. We must abolish the use of the word prefab, because that's what puts everyone off. But modern houses can be built quickly, and importantly as well, this is a green point, to high environmental consistent standards if you use modular building.
Very good, thank you very much. John. Significant increase in supply.
There's no question there has to be a significant increase, and I absolutely agree. I've got to agree with my colleagues. Building in a different way is very important. Pushing the planning system forward is important, and I'm afraid it takes ground space, but it has to be done. Funnily enough, prefabs are the most popular houses after the war that people had, because they'd had no homes before. But we have to find ways. It's about finding common purpose. Builders are business people. You can't run business without making a profit. And what we have to do is understand the profit motive, splice it up and see that there's a deal in this for the people that do the work, for the businesses that have to give a return, and for the local authorities that end up with a responsibility for it. It requires a much more intelligent and imaginative approach. But my God, it has to be done more quickly.
Great, thank you. Tim, increase in supply, how will you do it?
Thank you. A number of ways. We've discussed modular, totally agree. Discussed different ways of actually approaching some of the challenges through the planning process. Absolutely right, we have to speed that up. What can the mayor do? The mayor has the ability to go to government, which is what I will do, to call for additional funding as an additional stream of responsibilities to develop a fund that will actually help the region start building more houses. A case in point is where I live. We have a really big issue on a very large strategic site that is being held up due to burying pylons. It's been a great big issue. I've been working on it for over 4 years. We're having problems getting that done. That's the sort of thing the mayor can start moving forward to start delivering on some of the larger strategic sites. Right. He also has to start working with smaller house builders as well. Smaller house builders tend to bring their smaller plots to market quicker. So it's by working across the board with the industry, but also with housing associations, with working with local authorities to start building as well. So I can see lots of different ways I can actually make that happen.
Great, thank you very much. Darren, significant increase in supply, how would you make it happen?
So agree with a lot of what's gone on there about innovation in design, but also innovation in the process by which we build communities rather than just thinking about it as building houses. And, you know, there are some amazing examples from the continent where you bring the community together before you start building, rather than a house builder building them, and then trying to flog them off as quick as they can to people that come in and maybe can afford a £500,000 mortgage. So this, I think, you know, just by fiddling with the system and trying to do what we've done before, you're not really going to speed it up. This is about recognising the need for significant change in our attitude towards it. I think we need to think about finance for the longer term, not build and sell. Actually, the way you get sustainability into this system is if you hold on to that investment for 25, 30, even 50 years, you make these processes, these communities net energy positive, and you plough that investment back in to pay for the increase in sustainability. And I have to say, the profit motive is part of the problem. It's why people are sat on land banks. It's why big builders are trying to build large des-res houses. And I've just been part of building 16 units. We didn't build them for profit. We built them for the people that were going to be moving in. And that's the quick way that we can get units on the ground, is by using public sector land, which we retain ownership when we work as a joint vehicle in order to deliver a lump of housing quickly to help solve the social housing crisis.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to ask you a question, let's move to transport. I've had several questions around a very specific issue, which is park and ride. I'm not asking for that question. So if you have a question on park and ride with a very particular area, if you ask that, I'm just going to move on. But I am looking for a question which is generally about the state of the transport system. The lady at the back there, if you can pass the microphone there, and then we will move very shortly, time is getting to us. I'm going to ask a couple of questions on business and enterprise. Yes?
Do any of the candidates support public ownership of the bus service Compare Bristol, which is dominated by a multinational company, and Nottingham, a similar-sized city, which is dominated by their own council-run bus service. I know it would be a long journey, but anybody prepared to go on it?
Nice pun, very good. Thank you very much indeed. And buses and the control of buses is a significant or potentially significant area that the mayor will have lots of control or at least influence over. Stephen Williams, public ownership of buses?
Short answer, Julie, is no. I don't believe that public ownership of transport, whether it's buses or trains, or for that matter, in the bad old days when Bristol owned the airports, when I was a councillor, we had an extraordinary meeting once about whether we would approve expenditure on a new baggage handling system. It was one of the most surreal council meetings I went to. I don't think we want to go back to that, deciding whether we want Wi-Fi on buses in a council committee meeting. What is needed, though, and is lacking at the moment, is proper regulation of the services that are provided by the private sector. When even was abolished, I think, was a mistake, and I've said that many times before, in terms of the strategic oversight that it would have had, we didn't get after that any strategic transport authority for the last 21 years, and most of the other sort of city regions in the country have that, so they're able to regulate bus routes, they're able to cap fares, they're able to insist on particular payment methods, they're able to insist that if you want to run on a lucrative and profitable route, you've also got to run night buses out of the city as well. Those powers are now coming to the combined authority and the Metro Mayor, and I will use them very aggressively with not just the huge provider that we have in Bristol at the moment, but with anybody else who wants to enter the market as well. It's a bigger issue outside Bristol, actually. So if you're working Cribbs Causeway, for instance, the shops stay open until 9 o'clock. The last bus to take the employees home to places like Yates or Thornbury leaves at 8:30. Okay, that is a market failure that can be addressed by the Metro Mayor.
Thank you very much, Stephen. Tim. Public ownership of buses, if you're not in favour, then just expand that and tell us about how you begin to get more control and influence over how the buses work.
The way I see buses starting to improve is by bringing in some competition and more regulation. So I think that's something that's within the remit of the mayor, because the question's really, I think, here about what we can do as mayors. So I'm going to focus on that. Mm-hmm. So as regional mayor, yes, I would look to the bus bill to bring in different franchises, work with different operators. As we've said, having one person, whether it's public or private sector, running something, I don't think is an efficient way of doing it. If we do that, we can actually bring in improvements, real improvements, to the buses and the routes across the region.
Okay, very good. Darren, what will you do? Public ownership?
Ironic, I think, actually, the Conservative talking about increased regulation, and I'm just about to say the opposite. Yes, I think it's about taking back ownership of the public transport system so it's run for people, not for profit. But there's a nuance here that it isn't about thinking of the bad old days of British Rail and the like. It's about the next generation of services that we want to see. Now, there are two aspects which I'd like to mention. One is that about pooling of public budgets for community transport. And we've got budgets around moving kids to school. We've got budgets for moving old people to and from. Actually, where you bring those budgets together and you put them into a community transport system, you've got huge opportunities to offer services to people that need them the most without relying on private providers. And secondly, there's this revolution in technology about to appear in our transport infrastructure. So one example is a company called Slide that are using algorithms to be able to pick up multiple people. So it's kind of a cross between a multi-occupancy taxi and a bus. They're smaller, they're more flexible, they can get around. Now, actually, I think the really interesting opportunity is to talk about social enterprise moving into the space that allows us to offer flexibility in the public transport system. So, after all, Bristol City Council is now running an energy company. Why shouldn't it run a bus company? Okay. What's the difference?
Very good. Leslie.
Thank you. I suppose the thing with buses, if you wait around long enough, you'll eventually get the same one coming round, if you're lucky. We saw the transport system deregulated by Margaret Thatcher some time ago, who promised that she would not get rid of the buses in the rural areas, and hey, if you live where I live, it's very difficult to get one at all. There's none on a Sunday and there's three on a daytime. So for me, the big issue is that we do look at how we franchise the bus service, that the Metro Mayor will have the power to do that, that we make sure that what it's doing is that it's providing buses across the three areas, and it links them all together, so we integrate the system. So where the profitable routes run, we also make sure that we keep on with the less profitable routes, because they're the ones that may not be used the most, but they can be the most needed by certain communities. We've just seen in Bath and North East Somerset a bus cut, which is, means that especially older and disabled people, and not entirely, struggle now to get to the shops. They struggle to get into Bath because of that, that bus service being cut. But if we had a franchise bus service, then we could still support that, and that's what I think we need to do. We need to integrate the ticketing service, and not just for buses, but also for trains as well. And we need to look at the more modern technology to do that. And I do remember, because my mum worked on the buses as a clippy, I suppose, in those days. And but now we can do this all electronically, so it's faster, it's better for passengers getting on and off the bus.
Okay.
But at the same time, we need to make sure that they're accessible, because if you're disabled and you're stood at a bus stop with a white stick, you often find the bus goes by. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole issue about training. And I know the training is put in there by bus companies, but again, the Metro Mayor can make sure that is happening rather than not happening.
Great, good. John, how would you sort out the buses?
Well, I'll admit that I'm mightily intrigued still by public ownership of major services, but I would not believe in stealing asset from other people. However, before the LEP and long before that, the crying need in this district was to have a transport authority looking at the problem across the whole, because the problem is infinitely complicated. We have a new metro system. There are no buses funded yet for those bits that don't pay to run, so that's still a problem with the new system. It needs, again, a complicated approach. But profit is not a bad thing. It creates the ability to reinvest in things, and we're just not investing enough. And it isn't just about buses. Yep. As part of this plan, we have to think about long-term heavy investment in light rail. And that requires cooperation with people who own things. But the single biggest thing that the Metro Mayor has finally in their hand is the ability to knock heads together overlooking across the whole territory.
Great. Thank you very much, John. So, I'm going to give the candidates 1 minute each at the end just to give any thoughts, final thoughts that they haven't shared with us. But I want to pick up very briefly, if you don't mind, candidates, because time is against us, two questions in relation to business. Is Phil Smith here? Where's Phil? Phil, do you remember your question?
I do.
If you can ask your question, candidates, if I can ask you to be nice and sharp, you know, give sort of 30 seconds, feel comfortable about doing that, then we'll get another question in and I'll give you your final 60 seconds at the end. Phil, ask your question.
Whichever of you is successful, you have the power to raise business rates by 2%. How will you make sure that the business community agrees that this tax should be raised in the first place? And how to ensure it's spent on the right things.
Very good. Leslie, business rates, 2%. How would you give comfort to the businesses?
Thank you. I think one of the issues we've got is the lack of engagement and participation by as many people as possible. So for the work I've done over the years, working in equalities, working as a trade union and Labour Party member, a lot of my work is about consultation and engagement. It's what I do in my job now. And I think that's what we need to do. We're going to go forward together, then we need to talk to each other, and it's not about one section of the West of England taking a lead over everyone else. It's about working together to make things happen for everyone so we can all get the benefits from the region.
Okay, John, 2% tax, hey, I guess, would you do it? And secondly, how would you give comfort to the business community?
I'd certainly think that this whole thing is about a more even spread of taxation. We've done it. With a thing called a business improvement district, one of the organisations that I chair, we've had a very successful business improvement district over time, which has taken a precept from businesses on the rates. The way we got them to accept it was to tell them a good and convincing story and deliver it afterwards. We're going through another process, for another bid, and I guarantee we'll win that. Businesses will invest in things that make it work better for them. So clearly you can't milk the golden cow, but there is space to spend business money and get their agreement.
Brilliant. Darren?
Yes, I think we have to, because one of the benefits of devolution, which brings us into line with cities across Europe, is the ability to raise tax and spend it locally. But what I hear from businesses, what they don't want to see is that business tax increase just disappear into the public sector pot and kind of diffusely move out across the region. So I agree with John that it's about having very specific projects where there is agreement from business that they would like to see those things done. So perhaps rather than calling it an increase in tax, I would like to set a business improvement fund that we are very clear about having an agreement about what that money is there to do.
Okay, very good. Stephen, raise it. Would you spend it? Good comfort to the business community.
There are very few revenue streams open to the Metro Mayor going forward, and this is one of them. And in the second devolution settlement, which we'll be able to ask for, I would ask for more fiscal flexibility and more fiscal devolution to the regions. We still collect collect a lot of tax in this area, but we don't spend it. So that's a macro issue. But in terms of the 2% opportunity to raise business rates, it's not the power, you've got to ask central government to do it. I would work with a local enterprise partnership, if you like, and probably the bigger schemes where that money could be invested, but we'll make absolutely sure that small businesses who feel the burden of business rates now more than anyone else were involved in that conversation as well. So I would certainly, for instance, work with the Federation of Small Businesses to get an idea of what they feel would make a contribution to making Thornbury better or Midsummer Norton better, and not spend all of the money in Bristol. Because that will be a big challenge for everyone who occupies this post, that we're not city-centric, and we remember that the economy has to thrive right across the region.
Brilliant, great, thank you very much. Tim, would you raise it? And how would you give comfort?
Thank you, I'll try and be as quick as I can, Chair. The answer is, from memory, I believe the statement is with the approval of the business community, or words to that effect. So it is not solely in the gift of the Mayor to do so. Therefore, the only way I would consider it is by having conversations with the business community. If they feel that the Mayor can develop strategies that they will see benefits from, so be it. But it's not something that's directly in the gift of the Mayor. It has to be something that's done with the approval of the business community. And on that basis, yes, I will be talking to the business community every day. Something they see benefits from, so be it. But if it's not, very clear.
Great, thank you very much. So time is against us. There were several questions to think about. Brexit, which is, I think, has only been mentioned once in the session. If we raise that can of worms, we'll be here all night. So maybe there's another session to be talking about all things related to Brexit. But as I said at the start, I'm going to give our candidates 60 seconds. I appreciate that's tight. They've had lots to say already. But if there's anything that they want to leave you with, I'm going to give them 60 seconds to do that. And the way that we're going to do it is that we'll go down the line in a sense of their opening statement. So Tim, you're going to kick us off. You're going to have 60 seconds. You can stay where you are if you're comfortable doing that, and if you have the mic in front of you. And I'll give you 60 seconds, and then I will cut you off in time-honoured fashion.
May I just quickly, I think we agreed if reverse order, it was Stephen that went first.
Did. This is very true. Sorry, my numbers, I can't read my number. Stephen, you were going first. Not quite right. And one of us is on top of this. Thank you very much. Stephen, 60 seconds. I haven't started it yet, but I have now.
What you're looking for in this person, you've got a range of choices in front of you, is someone who, first of all, has a deep understanding of the local issues, the challenges that we face across the west of England. I was an Avon councillor, a Bristol councillor, a member of Parliament for 10 years, and served in national government as well. So I know what the issues are. What deeply frustrated me throughout that period is that locally we did not have the levers of power that we could pull locally to solve those problems. Some of those levers, not enough, but some of those levers are going to be in place for us to pull locally on May the 5th. I think I've got some good ideas on how we can grow the local economy. You can read about those on my website. I published them a couple of days ago. what we can do to get the area moving in a way that is sustainable. We need more investment in local rail stations, in buses, which we mentioned earlier as well. And finally, how we can share that prosperity more evenly right across the area. Some parts of this area are overheated. Some areas have not had the opportunity to share in that prosperity. So I want this prosperous region to touch everybody.
Thank you very much. John, your 1 minute.
Thank you. I've already produced a 40-year vision. I'll refine that vision to be clear that we know where we can go. Devolution is about bringing power closer to the people, so it means listening to people. But I'm going to make sure that there's something on offer for everybody, with a realistic, opportunistic, optimistic hope for the future. This place is the best place in the United Kingdom. We can do more to make it work for everybody.
Great, thank you very much. Leslie, your final 60 seconds.
Thank you. On Friday, Jeremy Corbyn, leader of the Labour Party, will be in Bristol. He will be launching my manifesto, which you will find on the website. I've got 5 key pledges around housing, around transport, education, around the green agenda, and so on and so forth. I do hope you'll come and read it. For me, standing for this role was very different, but I've got lots of different skills from years of working in different areas. So I've worked in engineering, I now work in the NHS, I've worked in local government. Everywhere I've worked, I've made a difference, and I can demonstrate the impact of that and the evidence. What we need to do is make sure that what we do in future is transparent, that we involve people, and we make sure that the area is a benefit to everybody, not just the few.
Great, thank you very much. Darren.
Thanks. Look, as the Green Party representative, I know I've got an uphill battle here. So I'd like to end this by asking everyone here to think about what kind of world they would like to be living in 20 years' time. If we're going to be living in a prosperous society where more people are able to share in success, where children grow up breathing clean air, where families can enjoy high-quality green space together, where decent homes with affordable fuel bills are the norm for everyone, then we have to act differently now. So the saying goes that if you ask the same people the same question, you're going to get the same answer. And the Green Party are often seen as the outsiders. But our policy from 10 years ago becomes the policy of today. And I think that in 20 years' time, people will be looking back and saying, do you know what? The Green Party were right. Tackling climate change was absolutely essential. We're really glad we did a huge amount to save nature, the oceans and the land. Mm-hmm. And we're better off because of it. Prosperity, to sum up my proposal for Metro Mayor, prosperity is about much more than GDP. And we're better off because we embrace the opportunity to think and act differently.
Thank you very much, Darren. Tim.
Thank you. I will try and be brief. I have tried to answer the questions whenever they've been posed this evening and trying to keep along that line. And therefore, I'm very mindful this Hustings was to do with the economy. I'm passionate about the region. I believe in the region. I can see our future. I know that the economy will drive the improvements that we all want throughout the region. As everybody realises, this region is not just about one city centre. This has to be somebody who can take the message out, engage everybody in the region, engage our current councillors, engage our current MPs and the government. We can bring the funding and the resources we need to this region when you've got somebody who's passionate, who will be champion of the region and will make things happen. I believe I can do that and really get the region moving.
Great, thank you very much indeed, Tim. That brings this hustings to a close. So I'd like to thank the candidates and good luck over the next 6 weeks in your campaigning. But if you could join me to thank our candidates, I thought they answered their questions. I'd also like to thank Business West for working with us to put this on. Fantastic event, so deeply appreciative to them and for getting the material out and for drumming up interest. I'd like to thank KPMG for hosting us very kindly in a great building on a great square. And thank you all for coming. I think The conversations you'll be having over the next 6 weeks will be important for the short and the long-term future of the West of England. I encourage you to participate vigorously in those conversations. Hold your candidates to account. Ask them the difficult questions and expect the proper answers from them. So that concludes the formal proceedings. If you'd like to stay and have a glass of wine or a juice or a glass of water and carry on the conversations, then please do so. Thank you very much indeed for coming.
Chair, would you mind, I did try to catch a resign at the front here to say I was getting nods. But may I, on behalf of all of us, it's our first hustings where we've all been together, when we've all been together. So it's our first time that we've all been together. So thank you all very much. Thank you to KPMG and to Centre for Cities for organising it. But as with always, the biggest thank you is for everybody for coming along. So on behalf of us all, thank you.
Good. Thank you very much indeed.